particular, it was with the yamas and the yamas, and no one could hear me because I was running it through a Bluetooth speaker. It wasn't picking up the mic. It was really bizarre. Yeah, okay, so it's working great. Yeah, it's something about when you switch to a Bluetooth speaker, it screws up the mic. Bizarre. So I'm talking a lot this evening. Verse 10, yes. Of 81. Yeah. So before we start, we'll just have a brief centering. So just closing the eyes wherever you are, unless you're driving, then definitely don't close the eyes. And we're just relaxing all the way down from the crown, shoulders, the spine, the legs and the feet, all the way down. Maybe feeling the soles of the feet connecting to the ground. And then just gently bringing our awareness to the center of our chest, our heart center. And just keeping our awareness there for a moment. And making an offering of our time together this evening to the benefit of all beings. May our time together serve others. May all beings be happy. May all beings be at peace. And then we'll just take a deep breath and exhale it out. So yes, verse 10, the Tao Te Ching, Cheryl, that's right. The Tao Te Ching. So I thought we'd start. Got so much to say that I've got about 10 books open, but I think we'll start with just having a read of verse 10 from start to finish, and then we'll come back and we'll break it down. So I'm going to go with Stephen Mitchell's version to start, and then there are a couple other versions that we're going to look at. So it starts, can you coax your mind from its wandering and keep to the original oneness? Can you let your body become supple as a newborn child's? Can you cleanse your inner vision until you see nothing but the light? Can you love people and lead them without imposing your will? Can you deal with the most vital matters by letting events take their course? Can you step back from your own mind and thus understand all things? Giving birth and nourishing, having without possessing, acting with no expectation, leading and not trying to control, this is the supreme virtue. So, as you can see, it's a long one compared to a lot of the verses that we look at, which are more just like almost sutras. So, we're going to go through this and just look at each of these questions in turn and see what some of the writers about the Tao, what their commentary is, and some interpretation, just my own interpretation. So, the first part, can you coax your mind from wandering and keep to the original oneness? Now, it's interesting that Stephen Mitchell chooses that translation because really all the other translations are different. And we'll come back to perhaps why Stephen Mitchell chose this one in a bit. But I'm just going to read you a couple of the others so you can get a sense of what the essence of this is about. So Wayne Dyer says, carrying body and soul and embracing the one, can you avoid separation? Okay. Another translation is, nurture the darkness of your mind and spirit until your soul becomes whole. One other, and then another one is, can you hold the body and spirit as one? Can you avoid their separation? So maybe what you can get a sense of is this two lines or this one sentence of this particular verse is really asking is, can you be both? Can you be the body but also connect to the spirit? Can you be the symbol of the yin yang together and not just not yin and yang. Not yin or yang, but yin and yang. Can you be body, mind, and spirit all at once? Can you move in the world, but under sort of from a place of not of the world? So interesting that Stephen Mitchell, the sage, says, can you coax your mind from its wandering and keep to the original oneness? And he's just saying that it's actually, yes, you can. The original oneness is always there. It's when the mind starts to wander that we get moved away from it. But there's a very, very Taoist sort of interpretation of this particular line that I wanted to read you from Salala Taula, because I just think it's fascinating how so many different spiritual teachings have this sort of essence in them of oneness, but that path to get there might be very, very different. So, for example, the Taoists believe the body and spirit are quite different, which most people would agree with, but in a very unusual way, I thought. So I thought I'd just share this with you. So, can you hold the body, Po, that's PO, and the spirit, Hun, HUN, as one? So the Hun and Po are very interesting and a unique way of looking at the human soul. So according to the Taoists, we are each said to have three Hun, that's spirits, three spirit, which are yang and are connected to spirit, consciousness, and the heavenly realm. So, if you're familiar with the teachings of yoga, maybe you'll know about the different koshas that they have. Well, in Taoism, it's these we have three Hun that connect to spirit, consciousness, and the heavenly realm, and then we have seven Po, and that's bodies. We have seven bodies which are yin and connected to our lower animal nature and the earthly realm. So that's 10 altogether. So you might think of, sort of similarities like the 10 chakras, or some 7 or 12, depends which teachings you're following. Or I say perhaps these koshas that start very gross and then end up more subtle. But for the Taoists, there are three spirit connections, three Hun and seven Po. So, one might also think of Hun and Po as our heavenly self, the Hun being the heavenly self, and the Po being the earthly self, or our spirit and our mind. So, Po is also sort of the mind in the world. Although we think of body, the mind body are the sort of connection that, with each other. Hence, can the mind not wander? And you remain in the original oneness, can you not get pulled away by the Po, by the mind, by the body, and keep the Hun and Po together, the spirit and body together. So many Taoist cultivation practices work to bring this mind and spirit into harmony, like many other of the sort of spiritual teachings, it's bringing the two together. So Salala Taula says, our Po, our animal soul, is usually running the show. It wants what it wants when it wants it. And this is what keeps us bound to the world of duality and to our various bodily needs and wants. It is what creates suffering in our lives. But on the other hand, our Hun, or our spiritual self, wants to merge with the infinite and fly on the wings of light. At the time of death, the Hun returns to the spiritual realm and the Po to the earthly realm. In advanced practitioners, however, at death, the Hun and Po do not separate but remain together. Within the Taoist understanding of reincarnation, this allows a practitioner to enter the next life with all of her spirits intact, which allows powerful cultivation to continue from one life into another. As newborns, he says, we are said to have our spiritual and animal souls in complete balance. It is only later in life that the animal soul becomes stronger in response to the world we live in. Hua Qingni says, in the world, the most powerful thing is the childlike heart. Remember, Lao Tzu's name also means old child. So the highest ideal of a Taoist sage is to return to the childlike nature of openness to the world without any armor or fear. I'm going to come back to this childlike nature a bit later. that's essentially what this line is getting at. That this fact that, as a child, the body and spirit are together. We are in the Tao, we are in the oneness, perhaps, coming from oneness. And then as we get older, we get drawn away by the mind. We get attached to what the mind is talking about. We believe what the mind is telling us. We believe that we are the body. We believe that we are all the labels. We create an identity for ourselves, and we forget this spirit part of ourselves. And then the sort of spiritual journey is to bring those back together, not just at the time of death, but also in this life, to become one in this life, to be, as Wayne Dyer says, carrying body and soul and embracing the one, avoiding separation. So, can we do that? So that's the first question that it asks us. And it says, can you let your body become supple as a newborn child's? So, I love this. Excuse me, having a sip of tea. Can you let your body become as supple as a newborn child's? So, I was thinking about this idea of being the newborn child as a body, and trying to think about, when we make that sort of connection, where the po part becomes sort of takes over, or where we suddenly, instead of being one with it all, start to be drawn away by the body and by the mind. And I have a friend who has several children, but the first child, I remember when they had it. They both took a lot of time off work together, the parents. And I think it was in, might have been in the first, certainly within the first 3 months, although I imagine maybe a little bit before that. My friend Alex, who's the father, was off work. I think he was on paternity leave, perhaps, I'm not sure. But anyway, he said he was at home with the baby, and was just looking at this baby, and the baby was, smiling and sort of laughing a bit in its crib and wiggling its feet and its onesie, and its hands were sort of roaming around in the air a little bit, as it always, as it had been for quite some time, for a couple of weeks they'd been doing this. And he said there was this moment where he noticed his baby. The hands were moving in front of the eyes, and then the baby sort of n looked at the hands, and its eyes started to widen, like in a sense of wonder, but also in, Alex said, like a kind of sense of fear. And it sort of just kept looking at the hands and then moving them, and then it started crying very hard. And he said he felt like this was the moment the baby realized that the hands were its own. That up to that point, it hadn't been aware of itself as a body at all. But this was like perhaps its first glimpse of itself, not just lying there and things happening around it and it going with it. Right, isn't that amazing? But it actually just suddenly thought, oh my God, I'm moving these hands. These hands are mine. Or maybe it didn't understand mine, but it understood that it had some connection to these hands. Or maybe it was just observing, holy moly, what is these things? What are these things in front of me? It became aware in that moment. But I thought it was so interesting because, what we're taught in our spiritual journey is to let go of all of our identity, to the point where we become childlike. And it seems so interesting to think about, can you remember the first time you saw like grass, or the first time you saw a book? Like you can't. It's, I mean, I don't know about you, my memory starts, I have some brief memory at 2.5 years old, and then it's sort of scattered memories from 4 or 5 onwards, but I certainly don't remember those moments And there must have been so many in such quick succession. You imagine as a baby, everything is new, every single thing that's coming in is entirely new. And then you're learning what it is, or you're learning the label of what it is. But to get back to that place where we are as supple as children, not just, you know, in the body, but the mind is just so supple that we're not even sort of associating yet. It's just emptiness. And so that I felt was like another way of looking at this particular line. Can you let your body become supple as a newborn child? And I just wanted to read, there was a commentary on this about the body in particular. Me try and see what this is. Okay, so Emil Conrad Daoud comments on Stephen Mitchell's in the back about this. So she says, there is no self-consciousness in the newborn child. Later on, the mind wanders into self-images and starts to think, should I do this? Is this movement right? And loses the immediacy of the moment, much like that baby. I imagine my friend's baby, all of a sudden it looks at the hands and maybe questions, whoa, you know, there seems to be some connection with my mind and this hand. And all of a sudden, instead of just moving around, which it was before without even knowing that, now it knows. And the immediacy goes. As self-consciousness develops, the muscles become less supple, less like the world. But the young child is pure fluidity. It isn't aware of any separation. So all its movements are spontaneous and alive and whole and perfect. If an adult body becomes truly supple, though, there's a quality to its movement that the child doesn't have. There's a texture of experience, a fourth dimension of time. When we watch a 70-year-old hand move, we feel, yes, that hand has lived. I love this. All the bodies it has touched, we get a sense of. All the weights it has lifted, all the heads it has cradled are present in its movement. It is resonant with experience. The fingers curve with a sense of having been there. Whereas in a child's hand, there is a sense of just arriving. The child's movement is pristine and innocent and delightful. But a truly supple adult movement is awesome because all life is included in it. So I love this. So it's sort of a reminder that although we're thinking of ourselves as coming back to be like children, one of it doesn't mean we're discarding all the experiences we've had, all the life, all that actually just adds to this sort of child. And you know, remembering that Lao Tzu was called the old child. So that's essentially what we're aiming for in the Tao, is to become, you know, as we grow older and wiser, then we also take on the qualities of a child, but we don't discard the experiences. Okay, which leads us to this next point. Can you cleanse your inner vision until you see nothing but the light? Excuse me, can you cleanse your inner vision until you see nothing but the light? And then we're going to talk about all these three together in a moment. So can you cleanse your inner vision until you see nothing in the light? Nothing but the light. Again, to me, this is saying, can you bring yourself back to oneness? So I wanted to read something to you about light that I thought was really beautiful and can help shed some light on sort of the thrust of what we're getting at here. White light, and this is from the Lunar Tao. It's meditations in harmony with the seasons according to the Tao. So all colors beam together make white light. You can make the brightness a unified self. When all colors of the rainbow are added together, the result is white light. By extension, true brilliance of character is only possible when we have combined all our different sides. just as no colour of the spectrum can be eliminated without tinting the combined rays, we can never be successful denying or suppressing any part of ourselves. Rather, we bring our different aspects into balance. The key to this is to adjust the amounts and proportions of our different colours until the result is colourless. Live your life by the pure light. Open the pure light within you. And when the pure light appears, go into it without hesitation. So I loved this because I felt like it was saying, we talk a lot in spiritual circles about this white light and the light within. And I know I've talked about it here. And one of the reasons I love the Tao is because it talks about the dark and the mystery. But in the sense here, I mean, it's not often the Tao talks about the light. So, can you cleanse your inner vision until you see nothing but the light? It says to me, can you bring it all together? And that's why I liked this sort of metaphor or just interpretation, I guess, of the spectrum of all different colours that only together can they create this white light. So, I really feel that what we're saying here is sort of clearing the inner vision means let going of all the judgments. Like accepting every single part of it all, accepting every colour on the spectrum. And it's only when we begin to accept every colour on the spectrum that we see the white light that those colours create. We see the absolute beauty that is there and was there all along because we were able to see them all. And maybe at the moment we're seeing, more reds and blues. but as we begin to let go of judgments, let go of our beliefs, let go of the identity and all the where the Po has been leading us since childhood, that we can begin to welcome all the colours and see the full spectrum, which is actually the white light. So I really loved this sort of finding this earlier today about the rainbow spectrum, because I hadn't thought about it in terms of that before. So I just wanted to talk then about these three lines. About coaxing our mind from wandering and keeping to original oneness, about letting ourselves become supple like a newborn child, and sort of accepting everything that we are until we see nothing but the light. I'm so thirsty. I'm so sorry to keep pausing and drinking. So Wayne Dyer kind of brings it all together. In his commentary. So he says this, Lao Tzu encourages the attainment of comfort with the seemingly incompatible opposites of body and soul that form really the basis of our daily life. We are connected to the power of the eternal Tao while simultaneously being in mortal physique. As we take on this seemingly ambiguous stance, we begin to see the world revealed as flawless. So as we take it on, we begin to see that white light, the whole spectrum, and the oneness. Everything that seems to be absolute is an opportunity to recognize its paradoxical reality. So he says, this teaching takes a series of questions. Can an adult body, with all the conditions inherent in the aging process, such as stiffness and soreness and limitations, can that be as supple as a newborn? Is it possible to be someone who works and struggles and still be the birthing creation? Can one succeed in these and similar ways and still be free of feelings of self-importance? And can you stay true to the Tao without allowing the ego to dominate, yet function in an ego-dominated world? And I believe that the fact that Lao Tzu is asking this question means the answer is yes. But it's for us to discover ourselves. So, this 10th verse says Wayne Dyer promotes a way of living that is guided by the power of embracing the one when the illusion of duality appears more powerful. So, read Hafiz's writing on this subject thousands of years after the Tao Te Ching was written, he says. And then there's this beautiful poem by Hafiz. Only that illumined one who keeps seducing the formless into form had the charm to win my heart. Only a perfect one who is always laughing at the word to can make you know of love. So a beautiful poem by Hafiz on this letting go of, seeing the fact that two duality exists as a joke. It's not okay. Here we are in this world of reality. We can have fun and we can laugh at it, but it is the oneness that really is sort of calls out to my soul. That's the oneness who I know who I am, and it's the oneness who can bring me back to love. Our origin cannot be split, says Wayne Dyer, yet we're in a world that all too often seems to reject perfect oneness that is the Tao. We can personally live by the Tao by suspending our belief in opposites and reactivating our awareness of its unity. That is, we can surrender ego and be in the world without being of it. Byron Katie talks about this in her mention, and when she's talking about this particular verse, she says, "When you don't believe your thoughts, what is what you are." So there's no separation, that you become everything. So her advice is, don't believe the thoughts. And when you do, she says, it's like falling in love with yourself. And when you don't believe them, when you stop believing them, it's like falling in love with yourself. There's nothing to do, no one to be, no responsibility, no meaning, no suffering, no death, because there's no duality, it's all one. You no longer believe yourself into a separate, distant polarity where you're identified as a tiny speck making grandiose efforts to prove something is true. So realize that you've never left the original oneness. That essentially means you were never born and you can never die. What suppleness this realization allows, she says. You've become immune to anything limited, so you become very supple. You become immune to anything the mind would superimpose onto reality. So how do we sort of look at this in everyday life? And I thought, when I was contemplating this earlier, that one way is how we regard others, could be a practice. So Wayne Dyer says here, his interpretation is, embrace oneness by seeing yourself in everyone you encounter. Which often we hear, sort of, look at someone else and see them as love, or try and see them as one. And sometimes that's a really hard practice. I don't know if you've tried that, but I have, and I find it really, really hard to try and see, the light in them, or see them beyond the labels I've created for them. And then I read this today. Again, this is from the Lunar Tao. It says, must a good painting look like what it is, a painting itself? Don't ask, what is it? And the author says, it's a vulgar phrase that continues to be uttered in museums and galleries. What is it? And I just had this image of lots of people in museums and galleries just sort of baffled at a painting they're looking at, and turning their head back and forth and cocking it from side to side, and then saying, sort of in an air of disgust, what is it? And if you've ever been to a modern gallery, you've probably done it. I know I have taken a lot of fun in going with friends and trying to make up our own interpretation of what some of the things are. And the author says, well, how can one really ask that question? The answer is obvious. It's a work of art. Which I think is great. What is it? It's a work of art. Art does not need to be a depiction of anything. In fact, that's a ridiculous role for art. And then he talks about how paintings show us what photographs can't, and so that's what makes them beautiful. But it's not the job of a painting to be something else. It's the job of a painting to be a painting. And Chinese painters, he says, solved this problem hundreds of years ago with landscape painting. While some paintings were depictions of recognizable places, many were imaginary travels through an improvised landscape. In other words, To those who might ask again, what is it? The answer is that it is an artist's mental journey. And reading this, I thought, well, how beautiful if we could approach everyone with this view, that instead of saying, what is it? Well, it's a Helen, and it's a 39-year-old woman, and it's got a British accent, and it lives in New York, and it's been my friend for this period of time, and it did this to me one day, and I remember it also was this. Instead of that sort of questioning that the mind goes through and then labelling, instead just thinking, well, this is a Helen, and it's a mental journey. That's just, that's all it is. Whatever's in front of me, if I can just look at it and say, that's what this person in front of me created for itself, and this is what my artist's mental journey, this is what my interpretation of this piece of art is, and let all that go, and just try and see the depth of what was there all along, just the essence. So I don't know if you've seen these Chinese paintings, as you know, there's just kind of, there's always mountains in them, there's probably bamboo, and they're nowhere in particular, they just come from the heart of the painters who are doing them. And it inspired a lot of people to become mountain hermits, actually. That's what historians believe, art historians believe, that these great landscape paintings, just people looked at them and there was something in them that drew them to go and live in the mountains. Which, can you imagine if you're so busy looking at it and just saying, well, what is it and where is it and I can't recognize this place? But instead there was just like an essence that was beautiful and inspiring, and that sort of encouraged people to sort of put people in touch with their hearts. So if we could look at people rather than, you know, with this question, what is it? And then even believing all the thoughts that are there in front of us, but actually see the essence, what it is, then maybe too, we would sort of feel our hearts beating in our breast. Because as someone, there was a Ni Zan, was the hermit of the cloud forest. That was what he was known as in the 1300s. And he said that bamboo paintings releases the untrammeled feelings in my breast, and that is all. Why should I care whether it shows likeness or not to bamboo or to a particular place? So I thought that was kind of beautiful. Okay. And then it goes on, can you love people and lead them without imposing your will? This is the Tao. Can you deal with the most vital matters by letting events take their course? Can you step back from your own mind and thus understand all things? So I wrote some notes here and I've forgotten what I meant. And that's right. Can you love people and lead them without imposing your will? So there's a video with a rabbi that's doing the rounds on social media, and he is talking about love. I can't remember how he starts it, but I think it's something to do with a fish. He talks about fish love. And he basically says that most of the love we generally feel for people is not really love, it's that we want them to do something for us. Whether it's we need them to fulfill our emotional needs or physical needs. In some way, all the people that we love, we are seeking something from them. And rather than just loving them for who they are. And he also talks about how when you give, you're putting yourself in sort of alignment with love, because in that moment you're letting go of what you want, unless you're giving to get some praise, I guess, or you're giving to get something, that would be different. But if you're just giving from your heart to help someone, then in that moment you're putting yourself in line with true love. And I feel like it's very much about this, can you love people and lead them without imposing your will? Can you put your will aside, whatever you want, completely aside, in as you love people? And then obviously the Tao was written as a guide to leaders, so talks about as you lead people, can you not impose your will? And just even to contemplate that is amazing, because it's so counterintuitive to what we've been taught, that if you want to lead people in any way, you have to tell them what to do. And you'll probably have some idea of what you want them to do based on the outcome you want. And instead, can you just lead them without putting that layer on it? Can you lead them from your heart? Can you lead them from this original oneness that we talked about at the beginning of this verse? And can you love them from that place? Can you deal with the most vital matters by letting events take their course? And again, this is sort of mind-blowing. Can you just let things be? Even if it seems like such an urgency of you to do something, can you just allow it to be? And I have this all the time. I have several jobs, and one of the jobs I just don't get myself involved too heavily in. It's my main job, so that's probably not the right way to look at it. However, for some reason, I'm very lackadaisical about this particular job, and everything always works out. I always the right interviews come at the right time. I get sent to the right people, and it always comes together better than if I'd forced it. And then I have another job which I care very deeply about getting right, very deeply about, and I push and I push and I push, and things don't work out. For example, I need to find a Buddhist to give a talk on Wednesday night about Buddhism and the full moon. It's Vesak Day on Wednesday, which is a beautiful day. It's when Buddhist energy fills the world, and the Christ energy. It's like Buddhism was for the West and Buddhism was for the East, sorry, and Christ for the West, and they're seen together. But on Vesak Day, the consciousness of the two floods the world, and it's beautiful, and it's timed around the May full moon, because Buddha was born enlightened and died on a full moon as well. But it's so important to me because it's such a beautiful thing. I feel so strongly about it that I've spent the last 3 weeks writing to Buddhist scholars and Buddhist teachers and asking them if they would come on this show. And every reply is the same. It's, sorry, I can't. Sorry, I can't. Is that there's no, oh, well, maybe if we can do this day or that day. Sorry, I can't. And I was getting quite stressed about it. And the day I just woke up and thought, you know what? If the show doesn't work, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. We don't have to do it. We can do something else. I thought I'll do one more call. One more call. I thought I'll call Lions Roar, the magazine, and I'll ask the editor if he has any suggestions, and I'll do whatever he says. And he was very helpful and said, call this person. And I called them, and they said, I'd love to come on the show. And it was just so interesting because it just sort of was just another reminder that the mind gets involved. It makes judgments about what's important, and based on that, we don't trust that things will take their course. We don't let events take their course. We force ourselves into it. And another thing I noticed today that sort of emphasizes for me, I don't know if you've seen this beautiful thing doing the rounds. It's a video of Yellowstone Park, and it talks about when the wolves were reintroduced. So the wolves would have been there anyway. So events would have been taking their natural course, but they weren't because man removed the wolves. But anyway, they put 14 wolves back in to the park. And so what happened was, as nature was allowed to just take this course of by itself, that the balance between predator and prey was made more even. So the deer population went down, which meant certain plants came back, which meant birds and bugs came back, and beavers came back. And because of all the animals and the plants that came back, the rivers started to flow more naturally. And they've been moving around, and there'd been a lot of erosion, and all of a sudden the rivers came back. And it was just so beautiful to think that, Like nature is so perfectly balanced, and it's humans that screw with it, and things go awry. You know, whenever people talk about, oh, you know, we need to cull this population, whether it's the rabbits or the deer, you know that that only got out of hand because man played a role somewhere in that. So I just love this reminder in the Tao. Can you deal with the most vital matters by just letting events take their course? This reminder that letting things be, letting nature just take its course is the best way. It is always the best way. We can sort of apply that to our lives as well. And hello, Doreen. Say hello. Can you step back from your own mind and thus understand all things? Can you sort of basically get away from the limited way of thinking that the mind gives you and therefore open yourself up to the unlimited and therefore understand all things? Maybe not from, you know, our usual perspective of understanding something using knowledge and, you know, learning, but rather opening ourselves up to wisdom. Okay, giving birth and nourishing, having without possessing, acting with no expectations, leading and not trying to control, this is the supreme virtue. And virtue is Te, T-E. Hello, welcome. And T-E is part of it's the Tao, it's De, and it's Ching. So the virtue is the TE part. And so I just wanted to read you what Szalonna Taylor says about this virtue. Okay. So it says this last line invokes Te in its highest form. While Te is usually translated as virtue, to most Western readers, that word implies a sense of morality, as in good deeds and treating others well. But to the Chinese, and especially to the Taoists, the word Te means a lot more and can be translated in several ways. It means, one way it can be interpreted is spiritual power. So sages are people who are strong with Te, or Dei. Their spiritual power has been developed and cultivated through their practices. And so, of course, they're people of good moral character. But in this case, Tei really points to their spiritual and energetic potency. Another kind of Tei is said to be particularly strong in places of great natural beauty. Isn't that beautiful? I mean, I'm sure we've all been there, or we go to, you know, we sit in a park or look at an ocean or up a mountain and we just feel this goodness. Like sometimes it's, you know, I don't know about you, but I cry, because it just feels so incredibly pure. And then I always, you know, and then it comes in, I judge myself by comparison. But it feels just so beautiful to be in such a beautiful place. And to the Taoist, that is Dei, that is Tei. This is why it says Taoists have traditionally cultivated themselves while living in the mountains, so they can be close to it. Dei is also thought to be Tao manifest in the material world. So we look at it like form and function. In this way, Tao can be seen as the yin and Dei as the yang. There's this step that the verse provides, offers one of the most important practices in the Tao Te Ching. It plunges us into the practice of guarding the one. I love this. It's called Shuyi, guarding the one. We are guided to bring the spirit and the body, or the Hun and the Po, together as one, guarding the one. This is no easy task, because our body mind is driven by our animal soul that runs various desires that can never be satisfied, no matter how many times we try and fulfill them. But it is only when we use our higher souls or our higher selves or our Hun to run things that those desires or the body can just relax and become less distracting. So this reminds me, so I have a dog, and she is an anxious dog. I rescued I didn't rescue her, but she is a rescue dog, and I have her. And I remember she, I take her to the vet. She's very anxious. Take her on a walk sometimes, and she's got much better. I've had her for 8 years now, but in the early days, I used to take her on a walk, and she. I've never managed to get her to walk well on a leash. These days, she at least is older, so she slows down. But she's all over the place, and you can see she's not relaxed on a walk. She's in a state of hunting or leading the pack. And I kind of just have let it go. And a few years ago, I spent quite a lot of time with an amazing dog trainer, and I left her there for a couple of months, and I came back, and we went to the vets, and I noticed that he kept her in a heel, and he put her on the vet's table, and she had no anxiety. And he walked her. We walked through like the countryside, and she stayed by his side, and her face was soft, and she was completely comfortable and non-anxious. And what I realized was that she knew that he had it under control, so she didn't have to worry. And that I was doing her a disservice, really, by letting her roam around and not, command her to be with me, sort of not in an aggressive way, in an assertive way. And I feel like it's a bit like that with the mind and the spirit, that we run around sort of, when the mind's dictating, it's very anxious and stressful for us. But if we just like give it up and let spirit guide us, then we become like, Millie the soft, supple, happy dog, rather than Millie the anxious dog. We've become like, anyway, that just reminded me of that. Okay. And then he offers some suggestions. This is Salala Towler. And it's simply, as you would imagine, just meditating. Doesn't matter how long you meditate, effectiveness comes from constancy. So every day, whenever you have time available, collect yourself, put yourself inside of you before you make your next move. Just always coming back to inside of yourself, back to this oneness. Okay, I'm just trying to think if there's anything else I want to share. So just to summarize in on this first, because there's a lot in it, and we really could probably do this over 2 weeks, but anyway. It's essentially reminding us to just always come back to oneness. To be, and what is that? It is to let go of everything the mind has told us, to let go of all the labels and the identity. And I don't know if you listened to Reverend Gloria this Sunday, but she was talking about this identity that we build ourselves. Letting go of that and sort of becoming like children again, essentially remembering who we are, which is this beautiful oneness. And there's this lovely poem that comes. It's one of the Taoist poems, and it says, "Soar beyond vastness without bounds. You are a thundering comet," which I just love. If we could live in the memory that we are this thundering comet of like love and unlimitedness, that'd be a whole different life that we'd be living. So that's it. I'm gonna be off the next 3 weeks. I'm on vacation, and it's a the time difference just means I'm not going to be able to step in, and I actually don't know what the reception will be like, or even if I'll have Wi-Fi where I'm going. So I'm going to send Cheryl some of Arnaud Desjardins' audios, just to see if you can, if you want to play them. But if you want to play something else, it's completely up to you. I just didn't want to leave you empty-handed those 3 weeks. And I talked about him before, so I thought it'd be nice if people could listen to him. So sure, I'm going to send that to you, and that's they're actually videos, so I don't know how easy that will be. I'm assuming it's fine. You'll be able to play them and the audio. It's not on YouTube. They're a bit unusual. I'll send them in a Dropbox. Anyway, we'll talk about it afterwards and see what we can do. Otherwise, I'll try and come up with something else. And that is that. And then we'll be back with chapter verse 11 a bit later. And so I just thought I would play a song to end. And it's one I've been listening to on repeat. It's one of the ones we have on the Gentle Healing music list this week. And I just so love it. I've had it on repeat. And it just reminds me of this idea of just allowing everything to be and coming back to how you were as a child. So let's see if I can play this
We could all
without the
watch live
ad. That's the
TV
only
here.
problem, isn't it? Here we go.
Take me back
My favorite bit in the song. Anyway, yeah, so thank you all very much, and look forward to seeing you being back in a few weeks. So thanks very much. Over to you, Cheryl, and over to you, Doreen. Thank you. Bye.